Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and I'm here with the one and only Emile Dacou. Welcome back here.
Thanks so much. I love being here.
He'll be conducting the NSO with John Williams' awesome Raiders of the Lost Ark theme coming up on July 9th on a Saturday. But before we dive into that, let's talk about, I think, what was you were here for last year? It was a John Williams theme.
It was all John Williams, and we've had, I think, since I've been at Wolf Trap, at least three all John Williams programs, but this one was just the orchestra alone. We had some, you were at the show, I think.
I was there.
And there
were
some
awesome
Star Wars actors. I'm not sure what you call them. Enthusiasts dressed in costumes.
They came out on like stormtroopers.
Yeah.
And a Darth Vader.
A Darth Vader.
Slayed one of the members of the orchestra
true.
And they had to drag him off.
That was so funny. So it was just, I was like brainstorming at a restaurant with my friend in the orchestra. I said, would you mind, I have a favor, I'll treat for lunch. He goes, okay. I said, would you mind coming out, putting your instrument down, coming in front of the orchestra and being killed by Darth Vader? So this it doesn't normally happen to musicians. And he said yes. He's a good friend, Jeff. and he not only was he slayed by Darth Vader. Darth Vader takes my baton, conducts the Imperial March. Afterwards, stormtroopers drag my friend Jeff off of the stage in front of his colleagues, who are all in hysterics, laughing.
It was awesome.
He said of all of his training, going to Juilliard and Peabody, that was the biggest round of applause he's ever gotten as a musician.
Well, not every day you get killed by Darth Vader and a
true
lightsaber. That was awesome.
And that was the one. That was our biggest audience in the history of the NSO playing at Wolf Trap.
Really?
We had.
I mean, I don't doubt it. It was packed.
It was packed, but there was no movies. It was just the orchestra and John Williams, and some unusual John Williams too. We did. I tried to do some things that people might not associate with him, like Home Alone.
Yeah.
Those Christmas choruses. Catch Me If You Can, which is his kind of Mancini-esque 60 score.
Yeah.
But just brilliant. He is my hands-down favorite living composer.
And I think your favorite was E.T., right?
Actually, when I left my position as associate conductor, they put a three-year ban on playing E.T. flying music because I would program it at any chance. But I was thinking with him scoring, you know, yet another film and his incredible fame and how everyone loves John Williams because you just grow up with this music as a kid and then you love it as an adult, that his music is known over the entire world. There is no musician in the history of Western music that is more famous than John Williams.
That's true.
Which is saying a lot, you know, sorry Beethoven, Tchaikovsky, but still.
Yeah.
We have a billion people in China, nearly a billion people in India, America, Europe.
You would put him up right up there with the greatest of classical composers.
Oh, without question.
I would agree.
And he belongs there. And it's like how many composers, you listen to the opening of the Imperial March before you even get to a tune, just the rhythm.
Yeah.
Or the opening of Superman or the opening of Raiders March. You know that in 2 seconds, you know what this piece is. Worldwide. Yeah. It's pretty amazing.
E.T., Jurassic Park, Close Encounter, Schindler's List, The Saving Private, it goes on. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and it's all different. I mean, the styles are different, and it's still John Williams. It still has his voice.
Yeah, it's awesome. Well, you mentioned Raiders, so let's go into Raiders.
Yes.
So you will actually be playing similar to what you did with Back to the Future last year.
Right.
This time, unlike the John Williams thing, this time will be like the Back to the Future thing where you'll be playing the movie too, right?
Right. We have the movie in a huge screen, like bigger than an IMAX screen above me. For the Filene Center inside and a large screen for the people on the lawn outside. And this is, again, another first. Just like the end of last season, we start the season with John Williams. This is the first time in the orchestra's history at Wolf Trap where the concert had sold out 2 weeks before the event. And we've had every famous person you can have in front of an orchestra or in an orchestra play.
Yeah.
And it's just something about this movie. I think, again, it's John Williams. And I think this movie from 1981, I conducted it in San Antonio a couple months ago. And again, two back-to-back concerts sold out in their theater. And there's just something about this movie. It's like E.T.
When
I do these movie concerts, I have to study them, not just the music like a regular piece of music, but I'm spending hours, tens of hours with the film. Because I don't use a click track. I synchronize the film by, well, certain things encoded in the screen I'm looking at, which is different than the audience's screen. There's different color streamers go by and lines that line up with parts of the score, but also the dialogue and camera changes. And what's having the action in the film. And I just never got tired of watching this film. It is not at all dated. There's nothing. E.T. can be a little dated because it looks kind of late 70s San Fernando Valley, kind of the hair or something.
Right.
But there's something about Indiana Jones. It just looks like it could have been made last week.
It's timeless. Maybe because it's set in, it has a period setting in the 40s.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas E.T. was sort of made as a present at its time.
At its time.
But, God, the movie's great.
It's a fantastic movie.
It's
so
one of my
clever. And it's funny because it kind of parallels George Lucas and Star Wars because he was in Hawaii, kind of escaping the fame of Star Wars.
Yeah.
And Spielberg was in Hawaii filming parts of Close Encounters. Yeah. And so they got together, and Spielberg wanted to make a 007 film.
Yeah.
And Lucas had just finished writing The Adventures of Indiana Smith.
Yeah.
And pitched that to him. and so it went back and forth, and I think it didn't come together until about 4 years later. Yeah. And Spielberg also wanted to make it more dark and have Indiana Jones be more like Bogart in
Casablanca.
In Sierra Madre or Casablanca.
Or Sierra Madre, yeah.
They want him to be, you know, an alcoholic kind of dark. Right. And there is...
You can see those scenes, like with Marion and the drinking. Yeah.
Exactly. When he thinks Marion is killed in the the fire explosion, and he's sitting at the bar, just like Bogart when he finds out...
Elsa.
Elsa's back in Rick's.
Yeah.
And there's that one moment where it's very dark and he's drinking and...
That saloon scene, too, where he goes to see... Marion, and he appears in a silhouette on the wall, a shadow on the wall, and she's like, she punches him. I waited 10 years, but just that whole saloon, it reminds me of going into Rick's. She's basically running Rick's.
It's kind of role reversal Rick's.
That's great. And then the irony, isn't it funny that it started with him wanting to do a Bond movie, and then he cast James Bond as his dad in the third movie, Sean Connery.
I totally forgot about that.
Yeah. That's great. No, but do you have a favorite, before we get into the score more, do you have a favorite sort of scene in the movie?
It's hard to say just a favorite scene. I think, one of the ones that still always gets me, makes me laugh, is the very end. Because living in Washington, there's just something about when he has found the Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah.
And it gives it to the government.
Yeah. And, bureaucratic fools.
And he's sitting in this office with all these bureaucrats and their nonsense. And they say, no, don't worry. It's safe and it'll be unharmed. And you see this huge pan.
By top men.
Of this endless warehouse. And it's a box of ones of tens of thousands of boxes. And there it goes.
Yeah, it's like lost in Xanadu in there somewhere.
Filed away. But it's funny. I love the end credits, which is just basically... when you do it as a pops piece, it's the march from Raiders, and that's the end credits.
Nice.
There's also it's a funny movie because it's very romantic, although there's not a lot of sort of kissing romance.
There's that romantic sort of theme. Tell me about that, because it's like...
The way he uses it in the film is really masterful because you have the dum-ba-dum-bum theme, which is Indy's theme.
Everybody
and that theme, mostly played by cellos and low strings, is the love theme, Marion's love theme. And there's a very sweet moment where they're actually about to be intimate, and you want them to be intimate because by then you really care about these two people. Right. And they never happen. So after this, the hardest part of the film to coordinate, that famous scene on the tarmac, and he's fighting this evil Nazi, big, huge guy. Indiana Jones is not, he's a brave guy, but he's not that big. And gets chopped up by the propeller. Then he gets the car, and the whole car chase. Right. And to coordinate that with the score I just close my eyes practically. So at the end of that, and they wind up on the boat.
Yeah.
And he's all beaten up and bruised, and he's pointing to different his forehead, the bird kissing here, and on his mouth. And so they finally kiss for a moment, and she looks away and looks back, and you think this could be the great romance moment, and he's asleep.
It's fantastic. It's great.
It's just something about Spielberg. He leads you down a path and you want to follow him, and then he does something totally different
that you're not expecting. Yep. Like in Cairo when the guy with the big sword's going crazy and Indy just pulls out a gun and shoots him.
That's great. Having done it just recently, it's just the audience just laughs like it was made yesterday. And all the jokes. And the funny thing too with that character of Indiana Jones, it's such an old-fashioned, old Hollywood character.
Yeah.
It's like, all the women are supposed to be in love with Indiana Jones. Yeah. And the men don't mind because they see themselves as Indiana Jones, or they would like to be Indiana Jones. And it's just like this universal golden age of Hollywood. And this one funny thing that kind of tickled me is when you first see him as a professor teaching, and you see him teaching as a blackboard, and he's saying something very dry about archaeology, and it pans to the class, and all the girls are swooning with, they're
things written on their eyelids,
I love you. And, he's kind of like, that's kind of odd. So he keeps going, and they leave, one by one, and they're kind of just so enamored with him. And the very last person to leave is a young boy who puts an apple on his desk. I didn't even recognize that scene. It's like a toss-off thing. But it's like, yes, everyone is in love with Indiana Jones because he's just such a great guy.
Fantastic. What about the famous opening boulder chase? What's that like conducting the score to
that? That's hard. And that was filmed actually in Kauai. So many of these films, the whole jungle scene and the boulder chase is really hard because you'll have things happen very quickly. So when he's going in the one cave or wherever he is and is all booby-trapped, and so suddenly an arrow will fly. He knows it's going to fly, and he trips something, and John Williams has this music happen, boom, like just right split. Or he turns and looks at the skeleton, and the skeleton's face turns and looks at him. And it's scored, and you don't really notice it in the movie because you're so distracted. It does set atmosphere, but you're so distracted just watching the film because it's so compelling.
Gripping,
that he writes something, if you played it in a concert hall, it would be the most extreme modern music. It's notated in a very loose way with suggestions for what musicians should play, not specific notes.
Okay.
So you get this slithery, creepy effect, and then a chord that you can't, it's like putting all your hands on all the white keys and black keys all at once.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, I thought, this is really, that's why musicians who can be very picky, because, well, you spend your life doing this, so everyone holds John Williams with equal regard, and you don't have to, you know, we're playing John Williams. No, they look forward to it. It's excited because you can enjoy it on any level. And you, as a musician, you can analyze it as serious concert music, as art music. As a kid, you could just love it because you can hum the tunes.
Right.
But the movies would not be, Spielberg would not be the most beloved person in Hollywood history were it not for John Williams.
Wow. It's true. It's true. Yeah. How about, what are some other, what about when he drops in the snake pit?
Oh,
or the Well of Souls, right?
That is also, they're playing the crazy sound effects, which sound almost electronic, just to make this sort of, because he's so, his fear. Fortunately, I'm not afraid. I'm afraid of certain bugs, but I'm not afraid of snakes. I think if I were afraid of snakes, that would really seriously creep me out.
Yeah. It's just one of the great movies ever.
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
Well, it has a really good heart and a good message to it. And you really, I think the opening sequence with the boulder chase and all that and the escape and the plane and then him teaching, you want to like this man. And you have, I think, filmmakers and composers, Alan Silvestri told me and Michael Giacchino last summer, especially if you think of the opening of Star Trek 2009 or the opening of Up.
Yeah.
And the beginnings of those films and Raiders, they're kind of like mini films.
Yeah.
Because they have a beginning, middle, end.
It would sort of stand on its own.
And I asked him, like, why, you know, in Up, you have this mini short film where you see this old man,
the couple,
and the couple and the wife dies. And in 10 minutes, you're in tears, and the movie hasn't even started. The same thing with Star Trek 2009, where you see James T. Kirk's father saving his wife and his unborn child, who is actually born while he's crashing the ship. And again, and she hears her husband's last words, and he's dead. She's holding this baby in her arms. And that's just the beginning of the film. And I said, Michael, how do you write these? And plus, the music is just heartbreaking in both those films. Up was more wistful, but Star Trek 2009, it's just, you're devastated, and it's only the beginning. He says, if I can do that with the music, then you have the audience for as long as you want.
All the way to the very end, until the faces start melting. Actually, the tell me about the music there, because what's it called? The Mystery of the Covenant, or the Ark of the Covenant, or the there's that really, like, almost spiritual-sounding music.
Yeah,
it's like, bum, bum, bum.
It sounds like very strange liturgical music, and it's scored very, say, again, if you imagine a piano and you have your arms on either opposite end of the keyboard, there's almost like no middle. It's very high strings in woodwinds and very low strings in brass. And it's like the mystery of the Ark of the Covenant distilled, and these chords don't relate to each other. It's just like one chord, another chord. And it sounds like modern French music from the 50s and 60s. And again, he puts that in. It's different from anything else in the score. So you have these distinct sounds. And then you go back to something, Indiana's Theme, which is the most famous tune in the whole piece. But then between that, you have a lot of music that is really, if you put it on the stage by itself, would be really challenging.
Do you still get goosebumps every time you start conducting the Raiders March?
I try not to, because I love films, you know, like you. It's a passion with films. I love old films and new films. And I just love being in a theater and the lights go down. I'm just like a sucker for anything that happens on the screen. So I want to like these films.
Yeah.
But I just have to remind myself just to not get too emotionally involved in what's happening, because it's just a lot of the technical work of conducting is is coordination. And certainly you're there. The musicians know how this all goes. If it's the end of Indiana Jones or if it's the end of The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
And just the masterful ways that these composers use tricks, like directors use tricks, or even Bach, Beethoven, Tchaikovsky, doesn't matter. It's, they're geniuses with what they do, but they also know the calculated effect that their music will have. And they pace it and make you go down a road emotionally, and then boom, they drop whatever they're doing.
Right.
And they all do that. But it's only the geniuses like John Williams and Bernard Herrmann and Steiner and Waxman who do
you
it.
You just named
such,
like four of my favorites.
Well, no, I mean they really can play your heart like, you know, like a guitar, and they just do.
And they do.
And we're so happy that they do.
Oh, it's just amazing. Okay, well, we could talk Raiders forever, but I know there's another show you're getting ready to do, too. And you mentioned Star Trek 2009
right.
A few minutes ago, but this time on Saturday, July 30th at Wolf Trap, you'll be doing the sequel of this new reboot, which is Star Trek Into Darkness, right? It's the same deal? You're going to be screening the movie and playing it?
Okay. It's 2013. Well, the return of Khan, which is has become the most iconic villain of the Star Trek franchise.
So Benedict Cumberbatch this time as Khan,
Khan, right? Yeah, and that was, I think this is the third film. Well, we had The Wrath of Khan with Ricardo Montalban, and then Ricardo Montalban in the original Star Trek series.
Right.
This is a new kind of reboot of the Khan character.
Yeah.
It's also the last appearance of Leonard Nimoy as Spock Prime, which is called the younger Spock. Or the
Right, because they have parallel dimensions lives. Or something.
And so
he
originally, Khan is in disguise as a terrorist in London and, you know, does this machinations to get to this far distant planet and then reveals himself as this sinister Khan. And they only find this out, I think, when Spock talks to Spock Prime and he tells him, warns him of what a vicious and evil character this is. We're going to have an added thing that hasn't been out in the press yet is Adam Nimoy is a filmmaker and... And a videographer, and he made a documentary.
Is
about
it his son?
His son, he's made a documentary about his father called For the Love of Spock.
Wow.
And so he's going to be at a pre-concert talk we're doing. It's called a Trek Talk with NASA and and Adam, and talking about the science of Star Trek and
the
mystery of films and space. And then Adam is going to introduce a trailer of this documentary that's going to come out the next day in San Francisco. And talk about his father and talk about the film. We'll show that as an intermission feature.
Well, there you go. You learned something new on WTOP. Not only you get to see the concert, but now we just learned you're going to see Spock's son.
Spock's son. And we had Leonard Nimoy with us in 2006, only once, narrating the planets. And that was actually the first time he had narrated a concert with orchestra, and I'll never forget.
He came to Wolf Trip?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
We had a special narration written for him, Gustav Holst's suite, The Planets. And I'll never forget. The orchestra actually looked startled because, you know, we're classical musicians. You're used to a certain type of applause.
Right.
And Leonard Nimoy walks out to this full house at Wolf Trap and huge applause. And then he flashes the Vulcan hand sign to the audience. And it was like something I've never heard in my life.
Wow.
So that was, I mean, such
that's
loyalty.
Cool.
And we all treasure that memory from 2006 because he was such a kind man and just was so humble.
That's awesome.
And people, you know, everyone wanted his autograph or wanted a picture, and he always had time for everybody. And it's good to remember him with his last film.
Aww.
And his son, who's going to be with us as well.
That's really cool. Tell me, that is really cool. Tell me about sort of the music involved in this movie. Because a lot of us went and saw it in, summer of, 2013 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But remind us who did
Michael Giacchino, who's... one of the new...
He played with last year.
Yeah, we performed his score last year, and because he's from the D.C. area and was free, he came to the concert and actually came to the rehearsal. So here I am, like normally the people I work with have been dead for 150 years. So to have a living composer with a symphony orchestra is unusual. And plus I'm connecting his music and his film, and he knows all the coordination to the millisecond.
No pressure.
No pressure. Just relax. But again, he was the nicest person and just... Sometimes it takes someone from the outside to remind you what you're doing, all of us. And, you know, I said, would you like to speak to the orchestra? Yeah. And he's just very just upbeat and so happy. I think he's one of the happiest people I've ever met in the arts. And basically what he told this whole orchestra of 100 people who've been doing this and played with everybody you can imagine, he said, I just want you to go out there and have fun. And it's like, you know, that's what we started out doing when we first couldn't play music and played pretty badly. You just want to have fun. And then you finally accomplish this impossible career goal.
Mm-hmm.
And you can kind of get lost and you kind of forget. I mean, fun in the generic sense.
Right.
Just enjoy.
Yeah.
And I think of that often because it's the easiest thing to lose. And I think our orchestra they're the funnest orchestra I've ever worked with in the country. I mean, who else would be killed by Darth Vader but an NSO musician?
Yeah.
And the other ones are just laughing and cheering him on. But it's hard, I think, in any career that's this competitive is to remember why you went into it and to keep that childlike spirit because it's the easiest thing to get squashed out of you in any field because life is just hard and nothing is easy. And then you meet a great man like John Williams or Michael Giacchino and They haven't lost that, which I think is why they communicate that so well in their music. The score is, when you think of Back to the Future, is very kind of an older style score and more, you know, kind of like a 40 serial, which was the point.
Right.
And with his Star Trek scores, they've gotten very more dark. It sounds more like the first new Batman film.
Okay.
And so, but with that, it's all extremely symphonic. And so he uses a huge orchestra, huge brass, a lot of low, dark colors. And that opening, the new Star Trek theme, dee-da-da-da-dum-bum, which comes back in many different guises throughout the film, depending on the drama.
Right.
And I asked him, we had a pre-concert talk at before the show at Wolf Trap, and I said, you know, as a composer, you have your theme, whatever it's the old Star Trek theme or this very short sort of leitmotif like you would use in a Wagner opera. And it comes back over and over. It's a great theme. I think it's one of the great themes in the past 50 years. But I said, how do you know it's any good? Like, what if you wrote this theme and here it is all over the film and it's just not good? He said he bounces ideas around with people, but you really have to, you have to really trust that what you're doing is the right thing. And that was, he certainly hit it out of the ballpark with that, because that's, that now is what people associate with Star Trek, is that theme. It's not Jerry Goldsmith. It's not Alexander Courage from the original TV show.
Yeah.
Although you, I always wait for that, because I grew up as a kid with the reruns of Star Trek, not the original series.
Right.
And that's when they put that in at the very end. You only hear the Alexander Courage Star Trek theme right before the end credits, and it just...
Yeah.
It's hair-raising because you wait for it because you have to hear it.
Yeah, exactly. I remember one of my favorite parts of these sort of shows is trying to sit there and guess where you guys are going to choose to do your little intermission, because these movies didn't have intermission.
They didn't have it.
I remember Back to the Future. I was like, I wonder where...
It's after the skateboard scene.
Yeah, it was after. Yeah. And then, Marty's mom is like, isn't he a dreamboat? And, and I'm going to find out who he is. Yeah.
That's right.
And then it went and it dips and down it, and you guys set into the intermission. Yeah. And then you come back with your, how do you say it? Entr'acte? Is that how you say it?
Oh, yeah. Entr'acte.
Entr'acte.
Yeah, he wrote a little short thing. It came from the third Back to the Future, the Western Back to the Future.
Okay.
And he was there in the house. It was just premiered in Lucerne. And so he's there with his wife in the Kennedy Center. He'd never been to the Kennedy Center before.
Wow.
And so I introduced him, the orchestra applause, and here's this lovely couple, great composer, hearing his music. Well, being in the Kennedy Center, hearing his music for the first time. So things are going well, like, okay, good.
Yeah.
So we do the intermission. We come back. We start with the on-track from Back to the Future 3, which I hadn't seen yet.
Oh, okay.
I'd only seen the first two.
Okay.
And the first one hundreds of times.
Yeah.
And I looked at the page, and I did exactly what was on the page. And so we get to the end, and I try to say, how was that? He goes, well, actually, it was completely the wrong tempo. I was like, oh, they had written the wrong indication. So I did it exactly twice as slow as it's supposed to go.
Oh,
it's supposed to be like, bop, 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 ba-da, bing,
so you
bum,
wish
like,
you could,
like a Western thing going, bum, bum, bum.
Yeah.
He probably was in agony, but he just smiled.
And, you wish you could go back in time and
yes,
and redo
get on the
it.
Skateboard and redo that one.
But yeah, no, he was there, and Leah Thompson was there, the actress
there.
Who played Marty's mom. It was great. All right, so what are they in these two movies? How do you pick to divide up Raiders? Like, what scene is the... Is the midpoint for
you guys? I've looked at it so many times, but they don't give me where the intermission is.
Oh, okay.
So I'll have to find that out. Unfortunately, with Raiders, or fortunately with Raiders, it is sold out. But I wouldn't. If you really want to see it, I would just check with the box office, because people always turn in tickets. But I wish we could do two of those, because it would. I'm doing it in San Francisco.
People
with the symphony
turn
there,
up.
And they will turn up.
It's one of the most beloved movies ever.
Yeah.
It's great. Okay, and then, but there's still tickets for Star Trek, for sure.
Yeah, for Star Trek, that's still a ways off. That's the 29th of July, I believe?
30th, July 30th, I think.
So, you're right, July 30th.
Yeah.
And that will sell very well.
But you think it's still worth people trying to hop on and see if they can get Raiders or go to the box office?
I think so. I would either go to the box office or call, because they always... Well, last year at John Williams' show, they're only supposed to let 5,000 people in. They let 5,050. So if there are seats... And the lawn, there's always room on the lawn.
Yeah,
that's where I sit when I'm not conducting.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome. Well, I'm just excited. I mean, it's one of the great things about DC, but also just about the summer months, man.
It's true. Sit
outside and watch some old movies with you guys conducting this.
And NSO was one of the pioneering orchestras in doing live concerts with live film.
Yeah.
It's back when I first conducted Wolf Trap in 2000. It was an all Hitchcock film. And it was just short scenes. Nobody was doing complete.
God, why can you do that again?
I want
to go. That'd be great.
It was great. And North by Northwest is one of my favorite scores, favorite movies.
Great.
And again, Bernard Herrmann. That's a Fandango rhythm, which is like a Spanish guitar rhythm. And that whole opening credit sequence with all the lines going up and down in front of the United Nations building, it's so captivating.
My favorite.
And we won't even talk about the train.
Oh, the train.
At the end.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Good stuff. I love the Vertigo score. It's so beautiful.
Yeah. And now I think those films are starting to be produced where you can do them live.
Oh,
but it's a great way to introduce a whole new generation of people who haven't seen these things live in the theater, only seen them on your phone or on your computer.
Right.
And you see this bigger than a drive-in theater. Did you go to drive-in theaters when you were a kid?
I've been to one, but it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't a thing of my childhood. It was more of a novelty. I was born in 84, so they were starting to close down.
They were closing down by then.
But I've gone for the novelty, you know, nostalgic in hindsight. But yes, it wasn't a piece of my childhood.
Okay. Well, it's that big for people who've been to drive-in movie theaters.
That's so awesome. No, it's great. And you're right. It brings both the people that love the movies originally, they come back for nostalgic reasons, and then they can bring their kids to see it for the first time, so you're just, you know, you're, it's just bridging generations with some great movies, and in terms of Raiders, like you said,
it doesn't get any better.
Yeah.
And the great thing, you know, also in putting this together, if you're rehearsing Mozart, if you're rehearsing Schumann or Rossini or, you know, any of the classics, you have to spend a lot of time rehearsing the style. If you're rehearsing Beethoven, this is the style of how people played music during the Enlightenment, during the founding of our country. And so so much of it is just how you play, how would they have played in 1770. And when you're playing any of the great Waxman, Steiner, Bernard Herrmann, Morricone, the music we're doing, Williams, this is our music. And I was listening on YouTube, so I like to hear how different orchestras play. So I was listening to a YouTube performance of something by Copland, Rodeo.
Yeah.
Buckaroo Holiday.
Okay.
And it was good. It was good. I'm glad they're playing, because Copland's not that well known outside of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like speaking with an accent, which is nice too, because music is universal.
Right.
But I thought, if I could conduct it there, I would rehearse it, you know, in a different way. Here, if I conduct Copland or if I conduct John Williams, this is our music. This is we know how it goes. And so you rehearse the notes a little bit, but the style, the intent, it goes unspoken.
It's great. Well, thanks for doing it.
Absolutely.
You think you're having fun up there. We're just having a blast out there in the audience.
That's
so
great.
It's awesome. Emile Decoux, he will be, again, just to recap, Raiders of the Lost Ark on July 9th, Saturday at Wolf Trap. And then again for Star Trek Into Darkness on Saturday, July 30th, also at Wolf Trap. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks so much.